Jet Air Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with thewareaglereader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back. It's been a while. We had a little unplanned hiatus there. You know we've been gone for a while when you look at the on-demand part of the War Eagle Sports Radio app, and we're not even on it anymore.
Ouch.
Yeah, we've rolled off the bottom. It's pretty depressing, but we've just had a variety of things to happen. I mean, from family trips and emergencies to I got sick. I probably don't sound great right now because I got sick a week ago today, and it's just been this awful hanging on thing. My teenage stepdaughter's got it now, and she's been home from school today, and we're all just waiting for it to strike everybody right before we drive down to Alabama this weekend. So how are things with you?
Things are fine. Thanks for asking. It's been a while since we talked. I'm excited to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Well, lucky you that things are fine for you. It's been a nightmare around here, but we got things kind of, I mean, there were things I'd wanted to talk about a month ago. I don't think we were even on the air the month of March. I mean, I think we were on maybe at the end of February, and then we've basically missed a whole like 5 or 6 weeks. So
pretty much.
Yeah. So fortunately, we are back now. And let's see, we've got a lot of little things to talk about. I don't think this is going to be an hour and a half show by any means, but and my voice sounds so terrible I can hear it right now that we probably don't want to go too long. But I was trying to teach today, and I was just like, I'd get to a point where I'm like, forget it, go home. So, but there's a lot of little things we need to cover. Let's see. I guess one thing I definitely want to point out as we get started here, because their time is running out, is that this coming weekend, which is April 19th, which is the same as A Day, I believe, right? Saturday is April 19th. Friday is April 18th. Is the Alabama Book Festival in Montgomery? All right. I've got my schedule now, and here's the plan. I'm supposed to speak at the book festival at 12:15, and I'll be talking about Decades of Dominance. I speak from 12:15 to 12:45. At 12:45, I'm supposed to go to the book signing area and greet the multitudes of Auburn fans who chose to come to that rather than A-Day.
Okay.
All zero of them, I'm sure. And I'll be signing books for however long they point the gun at me and make me sit there. No. I'm thrilled and delighted, you know, and absolutely flattered that they asked, but I'll be there, you know, as long as they need me to. As soon as that's over, we are jumping in the car and flying over to the loveliest village on the plains to try to catch at least like the tail end of A-Day and the festivities there, and maybe get for Mira, my 6-year-old, to get to see Aubie and stuff like that. So it's going to be a nice little family trip. Then we'll come back up through Sylacauga and visit the relatives. So we're going to kind of zip down 65 to Montgomery and then over 85 to Auburn and then back up 280 through Sylacauga. So it'll be a nice, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But if you are there in the Montgomery area and you're not going to A-Day, by all means, please come out. It should be fun. I will answer questions. That's probably the main thing I'll do. But I would like to see, you know, somebody there. It'd be very nice. I'm sure there's going to be all sorts of literary types and the tweed smoking jackets and stuff. But I want a few people in Auburn gear to show up, and that would be very cool. What announcements do you have? I have a couple others, but I don't want to hog things for too much.
No, that sounds very exciting.
Yeah, well, we'll see. speaking of books and everything, I do want to point out, because I have, you know, I have to take advantage of these avenues, that I will be also the following weekend, the 25th, 26th, 27th, I'll be at the Windy City Pulp and Paperback Convention in Chicago, actually in Lombard, Illinois, which is about 4.5 hours north of me here, with the White Rocket tables. White Rocket's going to have two tables with books from several different authors there, and I'll be there. And I'm going to be rolling out a bunch of new editions and new books, and I really can't wait. And I'm going to tell y'all a couple of things I'll have. I have a sort of a space opera military SF trilogy called The Shattering, and I'll have hardcover limited edition signed copies of that. The artist of it, of the covers, which are spectacular, I think, will be there too, so he'll sign them. And I'll sign them. And then also I've got a new book I edited that was written by other people called, Pride of the Mohicans. And basically we took the premise of the year before the Michael Mann movie version of Last of the Mohicans, you know, from like 1992.
Sure.
And we, there's four stories by four very outstanding adventure authors, that sort of chronicle the adventures of Hawkeye and his brother and his father, you know, in the lands west of the Hudson the year before, during the French and Indian War. So it's just a really fun adventure book. I'll have that with me. It'd be debuting it, world premiere, basically. And also, I'm wanted to point out that, you know, I have that 7-volume superhero novel series, The Sentinels, and volume one is now on audiobook on Audible. Dynamic Ram Productions, Chris Barnes and his company, Pete Milan, I always mispronounce his name, looks like Milan. Pete Milan did the reading, and it's got music and everything. I mean, it's a totally professional job from Dynamic Ram. So if you go to audible.com and just search Van Plexico, you can find it. I think it's only like $13 for an unabridged audiobook of When Strikes the Warlord, the first volume in The Sentinels, so. Check that out. I think Pete did a really cool job of, performing the book. So, the other weird thing we wanted to mention, and I had mentioned it to you earlier and almost forgot, but you thankfully put it in the show notes, is that, I appreciated, we had an Air Force, colonel who was up at Scott Air Force Base a few weeks ago visiting, the base, doing some work there. And he just dropped me a phone call in my office one day, just letting me know that he likes to listen to the show and enjoys it, and I just really appreciate that. That's pretty cool, huh?
It is cool. It was nice of him to call you directly and thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got Reynolds Wolf at CNN. We've got an Air Force colonel. I mean, we have some pretty high caliber listeners to our little old show, so that makes me feel good. That's really cool. So we appreciate all you guys, everybody. I mean, you know, we... We should have even included Reynolds on our Twitter guy of the year. I don't know how I forgot him in our list. So, all right. Well, I guess that's all the announcements. What's going on in the world of Auburn and college football and basketball this week that we should start out with?
Well, we can come back to the general world of college football. As other teams have been having their spring games and spring practices and stuff, and a few things around the SEC we'll get to. But Auburn's, you know, winding down spring practice, headed towards A-Day. The good news is, it's interesting, it's been kind of an uneventful spring practice in a lot of ways. And I was thinking about that today because I knew we were going to try and talk tonight. I was trying to think, why is this spring practice so news-free compared to other years? And here's what I came up with. Number one, no change in coaches at all. So no new coordinators. We're trying to see what kind of system they're running in the spring or get some feedback on that. And no quarterback competition for the first time in forever.
That's the truth, yeah.
Every other spring practice has been a competition to see who the starting quarterback would be, and that's not the issue this year.
Well, so, and you know what? And we also know that you can't really look at like a running back competition because even though there is a running back competition – history with Gus and this bunch shows that we probably won't resolve it until like the third or fourth game of the season anyway. So it'll be kind of a committee anyway.
And I mean, and the good news is, you know, everybody knock on wood when I say this, Auburn has not had the huge dramatic injury in spring practice. And that's been the kind of thing in some years past that's been the headline news of spring, is especially in a position where you couldn't afford it to have somebody get hurt. And that has not happened this year. So
been lots of little things.
Sure, but lots of nagging things. Guys held out a day or two there, or a couple of days here and there, but nothing that scares me.
Well, I want to ask you about this. I've been seeing rumors floating around the last couple of days that Nick Marshall has a leg injury.
I have seen those rumors too. I haven't heard anything beyond rumors. He's been standing next to Lashley in practice. So I'm talking to him.
Jeremy Johnson's been leading the first team offense, it looks like.
So we'll see. If he doesn't play on Saturday, that might be something.
That might mean he actually does have a leg injury. But, I haven't seen anything, people indicating that it's more serious than them just being super careful because he's such a valuable player.
Well, you know, that's a good point I hadn't thought about, is we'll know a lot of stuff Saturday because if you don't play on A day, clearly something's going on. So that's a very good point.
That's right. They want to get him snaps in a live game situation if they can. And if he's healthy, they'll do it. And if he's not healthy, they'll hold him out.
And have you heard anything about Justin Garrett and that whole business? Because we talked about it earlier, and then okay.
Our buddy Brandon Marcello and his colleague wrote a good article about Justin Garrett the other day about how he's back. He's not maybe not where he was last spring, but he's doing well. He's full speed. He's playing. He's practicing. And one of the things they discovered, it was interesting in this article, is that with the foot injury he had last year, is they discovered after that he was rehabbing that he actually has flat feet. And so he needed some special inserts in his training shoes and his cleats to help him prevent injuries with that. And now that he's got those, he said it's made a big difference for him. So he's backing up 3Z, and they're doing some dime packages where they put both of them out there together. But his attitude is kind of he'll play wherever they need him to play, where it's special teams, weak side linebacker, star, whatever. So it's refreshing to see, and I think he'll be a valuable guy. I mean, he's an experienced player, and I think he maybe get back to where he was last spring and make a difference with the team this year.
Yeah, it's just such a shame. I mean, he was just like the story in the spring a year ago, and to go from that to like hopefully we can fit him in somewhere and hope he feels, you know, hope he gets close to where he was. I mean, that's just a sad thing. And yeah, so I sure hope that that's a temporary situation and we get him back. I mean, he was going to be a starting, you know, player, and you know, goodness knows what kind of a season he would have had last year if he'd been healthy. So, let's see what else is going on with you had Chris Frost and Casanova McKenzie. What's the deal with them?
Well, I mean, at the beginning of spring practice, one of the things they figured out is that maybe they should be switched positions, and that maybe McKenzie is more the middle linebacker, Frost should be more the outside linebacker, which is, if you look at their bodies, you might have suggested that from the beginning. But so they went ahead and did that. And I think they've been playing both, and they've had some other guys backing them up. Hopefully they could come in and make some plays this fall. Guys that, you know, there's a young linebacker, Tony, that redshirted last year. So I think that'll help. And they've been shifting guys around the defensive line, playing some of the bigger guys at end, and just to see what that looks like, especially when teams are, you know, running the ball straight at us and stuff. I mean, if you could go with, you know, some of those defensive line, kind of like some of those LSU defensive lines for the last 10 years where their defensive ends were 290. Yeah. You know, when you put somebody like Montrevious Adams at defensive end or something, it's going to be real hard for the team to run the ball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get that and you get better play at linebacker. And I'm optimistic about the defense. I think it's going to be better.
Well, you know, when I think about Chris Frost on the field last season, the image that always comes to mind is him running somebody down with his speed.
Yeah, but sometimes it was a guy that he should have tackled in the hole, or a running back he should have been covering before, and then he was like, "Oh crud!" and he ran over there and tackled him. So,
he did recover quickly though.
He did, and he has the athletic ability to get there and make the tackle.
Yeah, so. And you know, one thing that we do have to note, I mean, you know, no more Jake Holland, and while that's certainly a mixed, you know, bag to have him gone, just bear in mind that for all of the very well documented, you know, issues with him, there were few players that when you ran right up the middle of power set that couldn't just smack you and push you back into the hole the way he did. I mean, that was like the thing he excelled at, was just smacking somebody head on and making them go backwards. Yep. You know, not the most mobile, agile guy, but definitely a good run stopper up the middle. And I hope that, you know, these smaller, maybe rangier, faster guys will be able to bring that to the table when it's needed, you know, like we're talking about stopping the run.
And I think McKenzie can do that. I think he could step in and be that guy. So, and the other thing is, we had a lot of talk about the running back competition. You know, the guy, whether it's going to be Cameron Artis Payne, or there was even some discussion of Grant being the every down back, which really surprised me.
Yeah, I did see that. That was odd.
That surprised me. But, I mean, you know, Trey Mason started out as the speed guy when he got to Auburn, and he evolved over time. So maybe Grant could be that. But I don't see him going there right away. They still see him as kind of the speed sweep guy. But you can see Cameron Artis Payne. You see one of the guys coming in this fall, Rock Thomas. It could be Petway. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. I still think it's Cameron Artis Payne's job to lose.
Oh, yeah, you got to think so. Yeah, I mean, I did see something where somebody was saying that Grant was like the strongest player pound for pound. But he's not huge, so that's a big qualifier. I mean, he's strong for his size, but his size, you know. So
that's right.
And I keep thinking we don't want to forget that one whole running back class. I mean, there's a tendency to look at the ones that are seniors this year and the ones that are freshmen this year, but don't forget about the guys from, what, 2 years ago that haven't played a down yet?
Mm-hmm.
Who was it, Jonathan Ford and the bigger guy? Ford's the one that moved to DB, right?
Yes.
Because he was fast. But there was a bigger guy. I feel like we got him from Mississippi. Now I'm blanking out on his name. But as our regular listeners know, I can't ever remember anybody's name. So I used to could, but too many years of bad living and I've lost my short-term memory.
That's sad.
You know, but anyway, my point is, let's don't forget about the ones kind of in the middle, because obviously the seniors are the ones that are going to step up and try to have their big year. And you look at the freshmen and you're like, ooh, you know, new, all shiny and new. But the guys in the middle kind of get forgotten a little bit. So, you know, hopefully we'll see some of them in action too, because those guys were very exciting when we signed them. You know, it's kind of like you forget about them a year after they've been signed. So, but anyway, there's been a lot of talk about the wide receivers, obviously. This is, you know, like
the Peyton Barber's a guy.
Peyton Barber's the guy I'm thinking about. Yes, exactly.
He's a bigger guy. He's like 225. Mm-hmm. You know, Cameron Artis Payne's only about 210. So that's the guy I'm trying to think about. There it is.
And we may yet sign the guy that we signed and lost because of the Memphis grade change controversy, right?
Yeah, Javon Robinson. I'm not holding my breath about that. I think the rumors are he's going to sign with Alabama, and I think that's probably going to happen.
Yeah. The wide receivers have been getting a lot of ink this spring for good reason, because I believe it was Brandon that pointed out that we had like five starting caliber receivers, if that, on the roster this time last year. Now we've got nine.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't lose. I don't guess we lost anybody, did we?
No. Nope.
I mean, I know Trevon Reed switch sides, but that still leaves you with nine. He's still on the team. So, I mean, you got to think that Coates and Dakia Williams have the best chance to be the two, I guess, outside starting receivers.
Sure, but, I mean, there's a lot of other good players. I mean, Quan Bray,
sure,
the slot receiver. Tony Stevens played a lot at the end of last year, and they like him a lot. Marcus Davis was a little guy. He's another slot guy. Jalen Denson is a bigger guy who could be that kind of blocking receiver that emerges and plays a lot. Ricardo Lewis, obviously, is another guy that could end up starting and playing a lot. Dominic Walker is a guy that redshirted last year, but he was recruited with Stevens, and people think he can play too. So, I mean, and your mystery guy from the national championship game, Melvin Ray. He, like, dropped out of a plane.
I know. When the line that you pulled out there, that he dropped out of a helicopter, I've been laughing about that ever since.
Well, and there's a guy named Stanton Truitt, who's another little guy, more of a slot guy, who's a true freshman who signed this spring in earlies, and he's in spring practice,
that's
too.
Right.
So,
yeah. That's, I mean, the one, so I was gonna ask you about.
You got him, Bray, and Davis that I think are all kind of little guys that are more slot kind of players. You know, and then you got the bigger guys who could play in the two outside positions, really. Mm-hmm. Coates, Dakia Williams, Ricardo Lewis, you know, Stevens, Dominic Walker, those kind of guys.
You know, I got to say, just about all of them, to a certain degree have turned, that we've seen play, have turned out to be really good blockers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's obviously something that's very emphasized in Gus's offense because a lot of our runs go to the outside. You need the receivers out there just totally causing chaos and havoc and disrupting the, you know, the DBs from making a tackle on the sweep. But I mean, Quan Bray had a quietly excellent year as a blocker. You know, he didn't have a great year as a receiver so much, but as a receiving, as a blocking receiver, I've been going back and watching some of the games and it keeps jumping out at me over and over that he did a great job blocking. Another thing that I've noticed that I knew but hadn't put together until I started rewatching the games is just how much they used Ricardo Lewis as a runner last year.
Mm-hmm.
He took the place of Corey Grant quite often as the speed sweep guy. And it's interesting because he was more of like a power sweep rather than a speed sweep guy. Cause, you know, when Grant would go out there, he could break some tackles, but generally what he's trying to do is beat you to the edge and get about 5-10 yards or get a breakaway.
Yeah.
But what Ricardo Lewis would do is come around on that sweep and then just carry people, just bowl into them, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he could get you 5, 6, 7 yards that way. He wouldn't necessarily, you know, get a first down every time, but he gave you a nice outside option for a power run to a certain degree power. You know what I mean? You're not going to get a fullback doing that necessarily.
Sure.
But
he's going against smaller guys at that point.
Yeah, he's fast enough to get outside, but he's big enough to do some damage when he gets there. Plus, one other thing I liked about using Lewis that way is that when you line him up like that, it doesn't scream, here comes the speed sweep, like when you put Grant in that motion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see Ricardo Lewis standing there before the snap, you don't necessarily know he's going to be running a running play.
That's right. You think it could be a pass play.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Whereas when Corey Grant is standing there, you'd be like, oh, you know, here comes the speed sweep, boys. So I like the deceptiveness of it too.
I do too. It would be nice if we could develop another receiver to do that with, and then you could go left and right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll see what Dakiel Williams brings. I don't know. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I kind of like Ricardo Lewis being handed the ball.
More than
having to catch it out of the air. I mean, he's a good player with the ball, but it's just you have to get him the ball where he actually has possession of it. And that's kind of the problematic portion of the program.
he's going to get better this year catching the ball, you're going to see.
I hope so. Maybe they've been doing him like they used to do, like Pat Dye used to do Reggie Ware, make him go out and catch a frisbee. Remember that when Reggie Ware was our big power back, you know, during the 85, 86, they had to go out and throw frisbee with him to make him learn how to catch. Put those contacts in, Ricardo.
I hope it helps.
I just watched the end of the Georgia game today, and once again, I was astonished at how the best way to get the ball to Ricardo a lot of the time was to throw it about 3 yards to his left and let somebody knock it to him. Because he's not going to be where it comes down. He's going to be off to the side a little bit. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be too hard on him. It's just how many times did he make us pull our hair out?
He did. It happened.
All right. Kerryon Johnson is announcing tomorrow as we record this Monday night. He's announcing Tuesday. So by the time basically anybody hears this, it'll probably already have happened because I'm not that quick on the editing. I'll get it up in the next couple of days. But what position does he play? I couldn't find anywhere that said he plays.
He's a running back.
Is he? Okay. Well, it would be nice if AL.com had said that.
He's a four-star running back. So.
All right. So Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, is that what I'm hearing?
Yep.
What do you think?
I mean, it's either, you know, any of those schools have a lot of depth at running back right now. Auburn has a ton of depth at running back.
How many do we need? How many can we have on scholarship?
You always need one more, but it's tough. I mean, if you're running back looking at Auburn, you got to think, maybe I'm going to be redshirting if I walk in the door there.
Well, you should feel that way at Alabama too, except for the fact that Nick just processed two or three of his star running backs lately.
Sure. But you look at that team, and I mean, even in Alabama, I mean, Derrick Henry's had a great spring. People think he's going to be the stud running back the next couple of years. If you go in there,
he scares me to death.
Sure. The best you can hope for if you go in there is going to be his backup. So,
Well, but I mean, Auburn has signed, what, two star running backs basically the last 3 or 4 years each.
That's right.
And if we didn't, we got in, you know, Cap, Artis Payne, who's basically like, you know, a sure. one from that class. So, I mean, we've got, I mean, think about it. For seniors, we got Corey Grant and Cameron Artis Payne, right? Anybody else I'm forgetting?
That are senior running backs?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've got two from every class. We've got those two guys. We've got Ford and the other one you just now mentioned. I can't even remember them all. That just shows you how stocked we are. We've got Rock and Petway from this class. The only class we don't have two from would be the, what, the junior class?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be signed in 12? Well, there you go. 11, 12, somewhere in there. I do the math. My brain's too tired.
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, we've got like 6-7 backs right now.
We do. We got plenty of running backs. It's not a shortage.
All right.
if we get him, great. If we don't, we'll be okay.
We'll be okay. excuse me. Let's see. What's been your impression about scrimmages in general this spring? Like you said, it has been very quiet.
Well, the other part of this I didn't get to was they haven't let the media watch anything really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything's been sealed off. And I really miss the days when the media could watch practices and we get full detailed reports on the internet about what happened and who played well and who looked good and which third string backup freshman was, you know, making plays and that potential. And now it's all hush hush and everything's closed and we barely get any information about what actually happened in practices a lot. It's tough. There's some out there, dribs and drabs here and there, but not a lot of detailed stuff. So
when even our press passes are not enough to get us inside, you know they've clamped down on things, right?
Yeah, right. That's it.
Yeah. So, let's see. Something about Tyler Nero.
He got hurt at one point and had to go to the hospital, but he's been okay. So.
All right. So anything else from spring? What are you looking for on A Day, if anything, seeing as how it's A Day?
I a couple things. One is I think Auburn's gonna come out and throw the ball a lot. I mean, I think they're gonna, you know, unleash Nick Marshall and Jeremy Johnson and throw the ball a lot on A Day. To do it in live competition, to do it in the stadium with people in the stands. To give the team practice, do it, and we're not going to run a lot of the same stuff we ran, you know, at the end of the season last year. I think we're going to run some different stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at that, and then also, like, who plays on defense and how they play. Who steps up? You know, there's a guy, Derek Moncrief, who's a junior college safety. He's been getting a lot of talk about he could step in and be a starter. How does he look? You know, how do the guys stepping up at cornerback look to replace – you know, our departed player. So it's going to be interesting to see. That's what I want to look at is the throwing the ball and then defending the pass, really.
Yeah, you know, I want to point out, I mean, you see people every now and then saying how, oh, A-Day is boring or I don't like how they do this, that, other. Well, understand, you know, A-Day is an event for the fans, but it's not a football, competitive football game to watch like the Auburn-Georgia game or something.
No.
This is something you watch analytically. Not just like you're, you know, not for entertainment necessarily. You watch it to kind of get a sense of how things are working. So, you know, if your complaint is it's not entertaining enough, like a movie or a classic SEC clash, you're not looking at it right. Get an autograph, have some lemonade at Tumors, try not to get heat stroke in the sun.
That's exactly right.
And check out how each individual player is doing individually. That's about all and enjoy the one time of the year that any Auburn player wears an orange jersey. That's about all the time you're going to see it. Man, that was weird, by the way. We were going to talk about around the SEC. I believe I saw some of the Florida spring game about 2 seconds. And it was funny because they had half the team in blue. The defense was in blue and the offense was in orange, except that the quarterback was in blue. And so there was a guy in blue throwing it to guys in orange against guys in blue. That was confusing.
That was bad, bad. Color choice decisions.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I'm making a note now. We'll talk about this as we get to around the SEC. Let's see. So A-Day. I've got to say one other thing about A-Day. I was complaining about this on Twitter earlier. Perhaps you noticed. In my day, in your day,
yes.
They used to have Jazz Fest, a attention Auburn, SGA and UPC, wasn't it UPC, the University Program Council?
Yes.
UPC used to bring in awesome jazz musicians and bands. And here, for those that don't know, here's how it would work. You get up on A Day, you go and get you some Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever, or Guthrie's, okay, in boxes, get you a big sack full of all this, get a blanket, go out to the amphitheater and set up with your drinks and your food and your picnic basket and kick back and enjoy. One year they had the Rippingtons, which were so awesome. I went and got their CD and I still listen to that. One year they had the Yellow Jackets, which were pretty good. And one year we had freaking Brandon Marsalis. And it was cool because Brandon Marsalis not only played, he also had like the Auburn Jazz Quartet or whatever come up and play, and then he critiqued them. And I remember his critique was like, you gotta let it swing. You're too uptight. It was awesome. So that, I mean, and it would end about an hour before A-Day game kickoff. So you'd do that, you'd throw all your stuff back in the car, you walk over to the stadium. I mean, that was a full day's entertainment for basically, you know, a dollar or something.
That's right.
You couldn't beat that. And yeah. It was cool too because you'd get a bunch of Tuskegee students come up too. So you have a nice little crowd in the amphitheater, Auburn and Tuskegee students all together hanging out, just having a great time, listening to some cool jazz. That was so cool. And then they quit doing it. It's a shameful thing. I'm embarrassed.
I don't know. I mean, it may be they got a bunch of other stuff going on at 88. Maybe they moved to a different time of year. I'm not sure.
Maybe so. Well, it was a great, great Auburn tradition, and I hate to see it disrupted. So maybe, yeah, maybe you're right. But that was just a great – that just made for a very good day to have, like, the jazz festival around noon and then 8A about, you know, 2:33, something like that. So, all right. What about Auburn basketball? You want to talk about that for a minute? There have been a few developments since last we spoke.
That tells you how long it's had.
Yeah.
I mean, first, Auburn hired – I don't think we spoke since Bruce Pearl was hired.
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, when our discussion last time was basically if Auburn could upgrade from Tony Barbie, they should do it. But we weren't sure they would be able to. Well, Bruce Pearl's an upgrade. Big upgrade.
They definitely did it, yeah.
I mean, the amount of airtime and that Auburn basketball has gotten on national networks since he was hired is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I get it on ESPN because he was their employee, but he's been on all these national radio shows. He's been on, you know, being interviewed by, you know, different writers at different places other than ESPN. It's been overwhelming the amount of press Auburn basketball's got, the amount of positive PR. And he's, you know, he's hired some good coaches. He brought in Chuck Person as an assistant coach.
Oh, that's awesome. The Rifleman returns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then yesterday he got a commitment from the top junior college player in the country. The top power forward junior college player in the country. His name's Cameron
Simeon Bowers,
mm-hmm. Who's, you know, a guy that could come and step in right away and be an impact player in the SEC.
Yeah, originally signed with FSU and then ended up here, so went to JUCO. So, yeah, I was noticing it looks like we're going to sign Bowers and maybe two other players, Jack Purchase and Sam Logwood maybe. I guess I'm allowed to say that, right? If not, then I'll delete that out.
No, we're not coaches. We can talk about the name. So.
So, I mean, is three players how does that qualify in terms of recruiting class?
I mean, it's every basketball is the roster is so much smaller, and it just depends on who's leaving each year. We didn't lose a lot of guys. We lost a little bit. Guys that had been around for a while that we're going to miss. But
yeah,
I mean, I think that three is about the space they had. So.
Okay.
Yes. If Bowers would come in and play right away, mm-hmm. You know, combined with the guys they had coming back last year, I think it's going to make the team more competitive right away. So,
yeah, and I thought it was very interesting when we hired Pearl immediately. Some national outlet suggested that we had the best combination football basketball coaches in the country now. And there was a lot of debate around that, and some others were tossed out. But, I mean, the fact that Auburn is even in the mix for having the best combination football-basketball coach, that's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So, and, you know, there's even, I mean, again, not to set the bar too high too soon or anything, but some people were throwing out we should immediately be competing for like the third best team with Tennessee. Now, I don't know if we have the players yet to do that, but certainly we're not competing for 14th anymore either, hopefully.
I mean, again, the SEC, after Kentucky, Florida, the SEC isn't that good. I mean, Tennessee made the tournament this year, and they were a good team. But beyond that, there's a whole bunch of nothing, I think. So, I mean, Auburn, with good coaching and better players, they would be able to jump up, you know, to the middle of the pack or ahead of the middle of the pack at the SEC relatively quickly, I feel like.
And almost as good as what Auburn did is what Alabama didn't do.
Which is what?
They kept their coach that nobody likes, and there's zero excitement. They're just flatlining. I mean, Alabama basketball did basically what if Auburn had kept Gene Chizik for 2013.
Well, you said, I mean, I like Anthony Grant. Who's a coach, because he was at VCU before he was at Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I met him when he was up here at the VCU, and he's a good guy. But they did one of those things where, and it's going to be interesting to see when Auburn does this, Pearl's attitude is, we're going to play anybody, anytime, anywhere. And Auburn had a scheduling philosophy recently of playing, you know, really bad non-conference schedule to try to pump up the wins. So then the overall record looks better. But then at the end of the season, you know, you haven't played anybody or beaten anybody other than the SEC teams. And the SEC is not that good. So, you know, Pearl's going to go out there and play a bunch of big conference games. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with
Look, now, to be fair to the last couple of Auburn seasons, Auburn basketball the last couple of years would play anybody, anytime, anywhere as long as – there was a direction in the name of your school, or it wasn't the name of a state.
You're terrible.
Or had the word institute somewhere in the title as opposed to university or college. Okay. Any other basketball news? It's going to be nice to see that place rocking and full, that big 90,000. Yeah, it's 1850. That big $90 million arena. With actually a good crowd in it when it's not the Alabama game, and as opposed to only when it's the Alabama game, and you know, ESPN covering it, I'm sure, and the SEC just in time for the SEC Network, we're going to have, you know, some new excitement for basketball. So this is awesome.
It is exciting. I look forward to that.
Yeah. What else we got around the SEC? Questions? What do you think?
Let's do listener questions. Then we'll end with around the SEC. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, I got some questions for you. You ready?
Let's rock and roll.
All right, first question. And some of these are holdover questions people sent us over the last couple of weeks when we, you know, theoretically intended to record, but we're not able to.
Yeah.
So the first question comes from at the Killer McCoy. And he says, Auburn gave up a lot of yards last year, but not a lot of points. So why is there a greater emphasis on yards but not points to define a defense's greatness?
Let me throw that one to you first. I'm still trying to process it.
All right. This is when people talk about how great a defense is, you know, they immediately go to yards. And this is one of those things that.
Okay, right. Scoring defense versus yardage defense.
Versus total defense.
Right.
Those are the NCAA categories. And in the NFL, it's the same way. When they rank defenses in the NFL, they rank them on yards, and it doesn't matter. Points matters. So the what you want to lead the country in a defense is fewest points allowed.
Sure.
Because that's the one that matters. Yeah, and Auburn was much better last year in that category than they were in yards. The other thing is the number of yards gained by offenses over the last 10 years has dramatically increased. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen new spread offenses, up-tempo offenses, these passing offenses, the different branches of that passing tree are out there. And so the offenses are much better than they used to be. They're getting a lot more yards. Therefore, it's much harder to look at the total yards as a valuable statistic. Points is what matters. And Auburn is better in points. I think Auburn is going to be better in both categories this year, honestly. I think we're going to – and the other thing, I've said this before, is I think the rest of the SEC, the offenses are going to be much worse. I think they're going to take a big step back with the loss of all these quarterbacks and explosive playmakers. I think other than Auburn, the other offenses in the SEC are really going to take a step back, and that's going to allow Auburn's defense and other defenses to give up fewer yards and fewer points.
Right. No, I totally agree. I've been on record since last season as saying that I thought Auburn's defense not only did a pretty good job last season, but that in some ways, if you go back and watch the early games, and I've gone back and watched almost the entire season now and analyzed it, in those early games, Auburn's defense really sort of carried the team. Now, again, that sounds crazy when you think about our offense and how much we've scored and everything, but if you think about the Washington State game, I mean, without the Auburn defense stepping up playing the way they did, we could have scored what we scored and still lost by 20.
That's right.
I mean, the defense intercepted passes. They shut things down. They caused turnovers. I mean, for all that you can say, I mean, they totally shut Arkansas State down at a time early enough in the season that we didn't really know. Remember, at the time we played Arkansas State, we weren't entirely convinced we weren't going to lose to Arkansas State. It sounds crazy now.
Yep.
But at the time, we didn't take that as a win for granted. And the defense came to play that day against a team that's not bad. So, you know, mock me if you will, folks, but I think that Auburn's defense was very impressive last year, and particularly when you compare it to the year before.
That's right. Well, the other thing is, I think down the road, I really, really believe this. I think a year from now, Auburn's defense is going to be, you know, legitimate top 20 across the board, every statistical category defense in the country. I mean, one of the better defenses in the whole country. And the offense will still be plenty good enough that's going to make Auburn a very, very dangerous team.
I like it.
All right, but the offense won't have to score 50 points.
Right, exactly.
So, all right, next question comes from Emily Rios, a frequent question and answer. And she said, I know I'm in the minority, so please help me get excited about Bruce Pearl. I'm excited to win. I'm less excited about the show cause penalty and increased scrutiny.
I said the show cause thing was very simple. If you want to show cause to the NCAA why we should have Bruce Pearl, just hold up a copy of our record of the last 10 years of Auburn basketball, and the NCAA will be like, have him. Fine. Please hurry. You know, he can start tomorrow. I mean, so yeah, I mean, Auburn basketball has been on life support for years. And this is, I mean, we're to the point now that younger fans just think Auburn has a crappy basketball history and program and don't realize that we used to enjoy yearly trips to the NCAA tournament when you and I were in high school and college as far as the team. We used to enjoy feeling like we had a chance to get past the first round in the SEC tournament. I mean, we'd always lose to LSU or Vanderbilt in the second round, but at least we felt like we would, you know, get through to the second, third round. We used to feel like we could bring in decent players. And we even had a number one seed in the NCAA tournament one year in my, you know, after I was gone from Auburn in recent years. So Auburn basketball has done some things in the past. We're not just Charles Barkley and 100 years of desert. You know, there's things. Gosh, the Wesley Person years were fun with Tommy Lee. With Tommy Lee Jones coaching the Auburn team, we did made some noise. No, yeah, Tommy Joe Eagles. Yeah, he wasn't the greatest coach ever, but he was not bad, and we competed.
I think my answer to Emily would be I was a little bit concerned when they first hired Pearl about the issues with his past, but reading about what happened with that, I'm less worried about it. I think, you know, what he did wasn't very serious. He cooked a kid some cheeseburgers and didn't tell the NCAA about it. That's about the limit of the story. So
he basically was just stupid, you know, and you can't cure stupid, but you can stop acting stupid if you're not a stupid person.
Well, and I think he learned his lesson. I think he got hit over the head with a hammer enough that he was like, sure, oh, I'm not doing that again. So
that's the truth. Yeah.
So no, I mean, I think Auburn's compliance department is on top of a lot of this stuff, and I think we'll be fine. All right. Next question comes from, Ignorance, and he says, what do you see coming from this Northwestern discussion of forming a players union?
Oh, Lord. I have opinions about unions in general. I'm not going to go there at all. But I just honestly, I have two completely different visions on this. On the one hand, I can totally see where the players are coming from, and it's not just a matter of pay. It's a matter of safety and health and protecting them and their future and their career, you know, and like if they're injured as a sophomore and never get to play again and don't get in the NFL, you know, and they've given, you know, they're all for the college and didn't get anything for it other than a degree, which I get, which is certainly, depending on the school, worthwhile. In other words, what I'm saying is I can see where the players would be coming from and why they would feel like they need some kind of protection for their life and their, you know, all that. I totally get that. On the other hand, I think it would be such a dramatic change to the sport and the situation that we currently enjoy, that I hesitate to kind of get completely behind it just because, I guess, for selfish reasons. How do you see it?
Let me talk about what you said first, and then I'll talk about what I think is going to happen with the Northwestern thing. I guess I think you're right in the sense that I see what the players are asking for. I mean, let's, you know, throw some rocks across the state. What happens to all these players at Alabama? Mm-hmm. You know, that they get shown, they show up there, you're third or fourth string, you get hurt, they, you know, you lose your scholarship, you're out. So they could replace you with some hot shot freshman the next year. Those kids, if they're injured, that some of them are on medical red shirts, some of them that lose a scholarship entirely, their medical costs are their own.
And they don't even get to finish their college degree, which everybody holds up as, oh, well, this is your payment. Well, they don't even get that.
That's right. Because again, I mean, athletic scholarships are not, it's not a 4-year contract. It's 4 1-year renewable contracts. And the school doesn't have to renew them. I mean, the player has to make his grades and that kind of stuff and has to come to practice and play hard. But, at, you know, at some places they view it as a 4-year deal, but at some places they view it as, well, you're not as good as we thought you were, so now you're out. So, and that's a tough situation. And so I think some of what the players are trying to get is more guarantees about that kind of thing and about treatment of injuries after they're finished and that kind of stuff. The other part is this kind of ties into the lawsuit that's going on with the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit against the NCAA because of the use of players' images and video games and that kind of stuff. And that makes me sad because they're never going to make the EA Sports college football game again. Especially now that Auburn has a really fun offense, I'm upset that we don't get to play. We're not going to have that anymore. But I understand it. I mean, it was 100% a ripoff from the players' perspective that their name, basically their name, their likeness, their jersey number, their abilities were used in this game. They didn't get anything out of it. So I understand that. I don't think in terms of the Northwestern thing specifically. Here's legally, I think what's going to happen. Number one is this doesn't apply to every college. It only applies to private colleges right now. The next step is it's being appealed to the national board. The Northwestern players then, if that National Labor Relations Board approves it, the Northwestern players would then vote on whether they want to actually have a union. This just gave them permission to form a union. Doesn't mean they're going to have one. And I think a lot of the players looked at all the controversy around this and go, good gosh, why the heck do we want to get involved in that? We got enough going on. You know, so I think there's that a lot of them may vote no, that they don't want to go down this road. And even if they do go down this road and they vote yes, then they form a union. Then down the road, they get in a dispute with Northwestern about, you know, some specific condition. Then it can actually go to court. And Northwestern could challenge the fact that they shouldn't really be a union. But only that could be years down the road. So, and none of that is pushing towards actually having unions in right-to-work states like in the South. So I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, the last thing I'll say on it is this. We all have sort of knee-jerk reactions to things. And we also kind of tend to be protective of things that we care about. And that applies to all sorts of things in life. I always just try to stop and ask myself, you know, when something like this comes up, I simply try to ask myself, and I'm not saying what the answer is one way or the other, but I just try to ask the question of myself, how will history view this? How will I feel 10 or 20 years from now about my position I'm taking now? you know, in other words, like, you know, if you were against, if you were against the civil rights movement in the 60s, at the time, you may have felt totally justified to be against it and feel that way. But ask yourself, you know, how is history going to look at this years from now when things have changed? And so I just try to bear that in the back of my mind always is what's going to happen, what could happen, and how will I feel about my position years from now when one way or the other it's a done deal. So just something to think about, I guess. I'm a history guy. It's what I do.
Well, and I think my final point of this is the bigger picture, you know, things are changing. I mean, I think the amateurism model worked the way that we've executed it for years until we got to a point where the revenue generated by this sports reached the multi-billions of dollars. And at that point, we're getting – it's kind of silly. Right. So, you know, back when the – you know, there wasn't games on TV all the time and the SEC was making, you know, $20 million a year and that barely covered all the cost of football, then you could go, okay, well, there's not any money to pay players. But there is money now if they wanted to do it. So they could work it out. So – how all that fits with, you know, everything, all the other sports and women's sports and everything, that's a whole nother enchilada. But I think, you know, I see a scenario potentially like 15 years down the road where the big power conferences in football break away and have their own kind of league outside of the NCAA is even potentially.
Yeah. So, well, remember a few years ago they did the CFA, which was basically that for television.
That's right. But it could be beyond that. So, sure. All right, we're driving on. Jonathan Harris had a couple of questions. His first one is, which has you more excited, spring football or Bruce Pearl?
Oh, well, spring football, but it's actually the fact that it's a question, I think, says it all.
All right, and next question comes from Auburn Elvis, who says, do you think Auburn will start slowly this season, or will the first returning QB allow Malzahn, the offense, to come out on fire?
I think he's going to try to come out on fire, and the only limitation will be getting in sync with the new pieces. In other words, I don't know that Dakeel Williams steps out on the field on day one. Now he may, right? I mean, we may watch the Arkansas game and Dakeel Williams catches, you know, 15 passes and 3 touchdowns or something, but, you know, 170 yards, but maybe, but, and a lot of that is dependent on Nick Marshall, simply because, you know, as you and I both know, you could let Nick Marshall throw 10 passes in a competitive game last year. 5 would be astonishing on the button, you know, bullets, and 5 would kind of be ducks, and you just never knew what you were going to get. So, if Marshall has improved even 20% and the new players, the new receivers and what all, you know, mesh, the offensive line meshes, then I think, yeah, we'll come out on fire. But I know Gus, and what Gus is going to do is going to want to run things, you know, his ideal way from the beginning. We've talked about this before. He will adjust depending on how that works, but he's going to start out wanting to do, he's going to want to throw the ball. He's going to want to pass it around. He's going to want to have Nick Marshall up in 65% completions or so. He knows what he wants. He only goes away from what he wants when he feels like it's not going to work, right?
That's right. And we've talked about this. He likes to build his offense over the course of the season and add in layers to it. So we're not going to get the full package at the start of the year. Now, I think we'll come out and execute at a higher level at the start of the 2014 season than Auburn did at the start of the 2013 season. I think it took Auburn you know, halfway through the season to kind of find their legs offensively. And I think we'll come out at a higher level. We're not going to come out and play the level we did in the SEC championship game. I mean, that level of football is not going to happen in the first couple of weeks. So,
will it happen during the season at all?
Yes. I think this offense, with a returning quarterback, you know, with the ability that Marshall has, the receivers, the running backs, I think, you know, again, I've said this before, Marshall has the arm and the ability to make all the throws. He just needs to get more consistent, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And if he gets much more consistent and more dangerous throwing the ball with the receivers we have, then it's very hard for another team to come up and play the run, and we're going to give them all kinds of problems then.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Our next question comes from Patrick Ringer, who says
– I've heard of him.
He says, I'm not buying any of the hype of any more receivers. He said, I'm done after the Pierre Lewis thing. Are you buying DeQuil Williams?
Well, I'd like to. I mean, I think you've got to conditionally until he shows us otherwise. I just can't imagine that he's as this advertised and is just going to be, you know, Trovon Reed.
No, I think it's different being a junior college guy than being a high school guy. I mean, I think he's shown what he can do at a different level. And I think, I get the hype about freshman wide receivers. It's a very, very tough position to come in and make an impact. We saw that last year where we had some highly touted guys that either didn't play or barely made a dent. So I think, but I think DeQuil Williams is going to come in and play. I think he's going to make plays. He's going to be a difference maker. I mean, it's a high threshold, but you look at the guy who was at Tennessee a couple years ago, the junior college guy.
Yeah.
Who went on the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think DeQuil Williams could be like that.
Well, and he's not going to have to be Ronnie Daniels in 1999. There will be other weapons on the field around him that can carry the slack he's not going to be the triple covered on every play.
That's right. I mean, again, we're going to run the ball a lot. You got Sammy Coates on the other side. You got Ricardo Lewis. You got other receivers. And so I think he's going to see a lot of one-on-one coverage, and I think he's going to be able to take advantage of it. So, all right. Our next question comes from War Eagle Pooh, who says, who is your sleeper player for 2014? He says, I'm going with Melvin Ray. That play in the national championship game has me wanting more.
I wanted more of it in that game. Well, let's see. I feel like it's going to be one of the running backs besides Artis Payne and Grant. I'm not sure yet if it'll be one of the freshmen or one of the sophomores, the redshirt guys. But I just feel like there's going to be one more running back besides those two that's going to have, you know, he's going to be the Artis Payne if Artis Payne becomes Trey.
Sure.
And whoever that is, I one of those running backs I think is going to step up and have between 600 and 800 yards. How do you like that?
I like it.
What do you think?
I mean, I think I'm a defensive guy, so I maybe start thinking about those guys. It could be our guy, McEnroe Alexander.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
But I'm going to tell
you. See, why do you do that? Now I gotta go dig out my audio clip.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Sorry. Man, this was gonna be an easy show to post-produce, and now I gotta go find an audio drop. Thanks a bunch, John.
That's what I did. Okay. And, but the other, I'm gonna tell you, the guy I really like is, I think he could start at cornerback and be a good difference, is Jonathan Jones. I think he came back from injury last year, played well down the stretch, and I could see him being the starter opposite Mincy. And being solid at starting cornerback. So Jonathan Jones is a guy I think, you know, could make a lot of plays in the secondary for Auburn next year.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Next question, or final question is from Jonathan Harris again. And he says, what has been the most surprising or best news from spring practice? Or has there been anything really disappointing to you?
I think that the best news has just been that there hasn't been any catastrophic injuries and everything's rolling along like a machine. And we got a quarterback that's back.
That's right.
And our backup quarterback's getting a lot of reps too. So just good news all the way around.
No, I agree. I think that's the biggest thing is just nobody getting hurt and Marshall having more time and to work with the receivers, with the coaches when they're with him. I think it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, I mean, the offensive line's been a lot of discussion this year, and there's been some talk about shifting people around and that kind of stuff. But I think what it comes down to is we have six or seven guys that could start, and they're giving them different looks at different times, and I think that's going to help over the course of the season. So.
Oh, have we heard anything about our new kickers?
I have not heard a lot about the kickers yet, so hopefully in a day they can come out and, you know, in some game situations and actually do something. So
I mean, we've been able to take that position for granted for so long.
We've been spoiled.
We've had good kickers after good kickers, and you got to hope we're just going to continue that streak because – you'd hate to think we're going to ever hit a bump where we struggle with a kicker. It's been a long time since we struggled with a kicker.
That's right. It's painful to struggle with a kicker.
We don't want to
go back there.
Yeah, that's one of those things where you got like 22 guys doing their part, and then one guy struggles, and it just messes everything up, makes everybody feel bad. So
that's right.
And you have sympathy for them, but still, you know, it makes you feel bad. Let's do some quick hits around the SEC. I got three or four things I wanted to mention. What you got around the SEC?
The first thing is that Missouri.
Yes.
Had a rash of arrests over the last, you know, couple of years, and Doriel Green Beckham got kicked off the team.
They couldn't handle success, could they?
Well, it's interesting. They moved to the SEC. I don't know if this has been a problem there in the past because I don't know if about them, or they just loosen the reins to try to compete with those SEC schools. But they've had a lot of players get in trouble.
You think a letter arrived on the president of Missouri's desk about a year ago and said, you know, dear president, whatever, Truman, I don't know. it's, you know, now that you're in the SEC, we expect that you should immediately begin to have arrests and cover-ups of arrests. And clearly last year you didn't get the memo. Program was entirely too crime free. So you might want to get with Coach Richt for some pointers.
I thought you were talking about with the Missouri coach's name.
I am. I'm saying that they're telling the Missouri coaches, you might want to get with Coach Richt. He can give you some pointers on, you know, making sure your players act like thugs on and off the field, and then what to do
and that,
when that happens.
Scooter accidents and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So. Missouri has stepped up their SEC game. Good for them. Getting that star player kicked off the team. I hate it for you, Missouri. And I told my wife when I heard that, I said, I guess the one thing we know is that we won't be playing Missouri next year.
No, I don't think we will.
Because we won't be seeing them in Atlanta again.
Nope. All right, what else around the SEC this spring has stood out to you?
I'll say my favorite one for last. But first, I saw that Coach – bulimia.
You love butchering his name.
He definitely is not suffering from bulimia.
No,
he's the opposite, the anti-bulimia. I saw just today that he's focusing on Auburn in their practices. They open up with us in Auburn, right? Yeah, in Auburn they open
up.
That's right. SEC Network first Saturday game, in Auburn. And I guess this means that he has done the dreaded deed. He has circled us on the schedule. Perhaps even using Arkansas Razorback red ink. And there might have even been underlining.
Are you saying it's not in pencil?
It's like his contract. They wish his contract was. it was in chalk.
Well, there you go.
So,
if he circled us, we got real problems.
But. He's got his eyes firmly fixed on the Tigers as his big bugaboo that he's going to have to take care of this year.
You don't focus on preparing for other teams this spring, other than, for example, if you got to start preparing your defense or how they're going to do when they start playing against, you know, hurry up teams, up tempo teams. We're not the only team they're going to play it's like that. So,
yeah.
Other than that, I'm not sure there's any value in focusing on other teams in the spring. It's a long time from spring to fall, and you need to worry about getting yourself better at what you're doing than worried about your opponent. So,
yeah. My last tidbit, you know, I'm concerned, by the way. I wanted to note, we're using a different audio recorder for the first time ever tonight. When I first started doing podcasts in mid-late 2012, both this one and the White Rocket Show. But by the way, listen to the White Rocket Show for the latest in popular culture conversation. I was using CallGraph, and Skype changed over the holidays this past year, and it quit working. And so I had to go get this thing. I got this Chinese program that supposedly works the same way, but this is our first trial run. So if all you hear is John's little audio meter is jumping when he talks. Mine's barely even moving, and I got this nice microphone, so I'm really concerned we're only going to have your side of the show, John. People wonder who you're talking to for an hour when we play this back, but just cross your fingers that it's really working and I'm not, you know, just totally ruining this. I think the last thing and the thing I thought was fun was that Florida. Who's Florida's new offensive coordinator? Didn't they get a new offensive coordinator after that?
Kurt Roper from Duke.
Okay.
So if you saw the Chick-fil-A Bowl where they played Texas A&M, you have an idea that what that guy could do.
Yeah, that's right. That was quite a game. They're going to use a no-huddle, hurry-up spread type thing, apparently. A shotgun, no-huddle, hurry-up thing. So yet another team goes down our avenue. What do you think of that, of Florida running that offense?
Well, I mean, they're not going to run it the exact offense that we run.
Well, no, but I mean, just in general, that philosophy.
I mean, they got to do something. Their offense was abysmal the last couple of years. It was a train wreck. I think Roper's a good coach. He's going to make a big difference there. The question is, I'm not sure Florida has as much offensive talent as everybody thinks they do. I mean, I'm not sure Driscoll's that good. And who's the last receiver at Florida that actually scared you? It's been,
while.
It's been at least 5 or 6 years since they had a receiver that scared you.
Yeah.
So,
they used to have 3 or 4 every year that scared you.
Sure. I mean, really, it's, Percy Harvin and Lewis Murphy are the last two guys there that actually did anything. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And that was a while, it's been a while ago. So that's a position where they recruit a lot of high profile guys, but, they ended up not developing anything. So that's going to be the biggest thing on Roper is get some of those players to turn into playmakers. So. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see Florida running that offense. And you're right, it couldn't get much worse. So they were basically paleolithic last year. They made our 2012 offense look good. So, all right, is that pretty much it for tonight? We ended up getting about an hour's worth of show in.
That's all I got, man.
All right. Well, don't forget, check out the Alabama Book Festival this coming weekend. Also, by all means, listen to the – I didn't have any sponsor tonight. I'm just drinking water. do check out the White Rocket podcast, the sister show of this program. John is our guest on there sometime, and I have other people on there that we have conversations with. We've got some interesting – we're going to do an episode coming up with Mark Busquet on the 80s Cold War Reagan-era movies. That'll be fun, and got some others coming up, so – check out the White Rocket podcast. And otherwise, we appreciate the War Eagle Reader. We appreciate the War Eagle Sports Network. We're sorry that we've been off the air for a little over a month, but we are back and hopefully be back again in a couple of weeks or so. We'll be talking about how A-Day played out and all that. So, John, I guess I will give you a big War Eagle, and our time is up. We thank you for yours.
War Eagle, man.
War Eagle, John.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.